Okay. So, if you're interested in loop calculation, you have two ways to make your life easier. You go to higher loops, or you do one loop with many legs. So I've chosen in the moment to do one loop with many legs, and I will just show you a bit some words which I have did in the last couple of months or years together with some friends. How does this work?
So first I give a motivation.
First I give a motivation, and then I will actually show you our goal and project, which is aimed to actually do some industrial production of these NLO amplitudes. I will explain you a bit the formalism we will use, and I show you some examples, and I will close with an outlook and a summary. Just a bit of motivation. We just do not do these computations for fun. There is really a phenomenological motivation here. You look, the expected number of 4 jet events at LHC is of the order nanobarn. It's huge. This prediction is based only on a leading order prediction of these people here. And it's clear that at TeV collision energies, we multiparticle and jet production plays a very important role. And with leading order predictions, you know that you have all kind of problems with scale dependencies. Typically, if you have cuts, you have some problems with that at leading order, some phase space regions are not populated. And if you want to understand jet structure, it's clear the more particle you have, the better. And also, if you just think about discovering the Higgs and making measurements of the coupling constants, a lot of signal reactions actually are calculated to a very high precision meanwhile. But of course, to be consistent and to make consistent estimates of signal and background, you also have to know the background at next to leading order. And what complicates the situation here, typically at the signal region, you have to calculate 2 to 3 processes at one loop. But if you look at typical background reactions, what you need, for example, to describe proton-proton is going to 2 jets plus 2 photons, you have to calculate this kind of diagrams, which have 6 external legs. And this is just very complicated. And I will speak about this a bit. So what we need here is not just another calculation and then another calculation. What we need now is a tool that produces a lot of these amplitudes at once. So, and what can be said about automated computation of such multiparton processes is that 2 to 2 is easy. People have thought about these things many years now, and there are several packages which treat these calculations very efficiently, actually. Already 2 to 3 is very hard. And if you count, you can still count the number of calculations which are done in the last couple of years. There are not too many, and for 2 to 4, there is no realistic example known in the moment. So, of course, and this was said many times today already, if you want to calculate a 2 to n process at next to leading order, you have to calculate real 2 to n plus 1 emission corrections to a 2 to n Born process, and you have to add the virtual 2 to n corrections to the game, and then you have to combine the two parts, and you have to cancel the infrared divergences explicitly. And because of all this experience which we gained in the last years, for us it seemed feasible now to construct an automatic program which produces finite numerically stable NLO amplitudes for, say, for the beginning up to 2 to 4 partonic processes in form of some Fortran C functions. Some other people are working on this in the moment. I would say activity really started in the last, say, 2 years, and it's very good for the LHC, I would say, because we need several years to accomplish this task. So just to give a name, what we want to do is to build a golem, a general one-loop evaluator for matrix elements. This is the aim of the game, and it should not only work for QCD processes and for electroweak processes, it should work for everything. Now, first a word, if you have to calculate the real emission corrections for 2 to 4 Born matrix elements, three matrix elements, 2 to 5 is not an issue today. There are a lot of packages which can do the things, and I think technically this is well understood, and I just go over it very quickly. I don't make a word. The bottleneck for these kind of calculations are actually the one loop 2 to 4 Feynman diagrams which you have to calculate. And I just give you an outline of our algorithm, and later I will show some formulas and some example to show you what all this means. So the basic idea is we thought the amplitudes by helicity, color, and some analyticity properties means some master integrals. The generation of the graphs to a given amplitude, there are some packages on the market which we can use. Then what I like most actually, you make a tensor decomposition of a scattering amplitude. Means if you look at 2 to 4 processes, you might have 6 vector particles, 6 external vector particles, 4 vector particles and 2 fermions, say, or other combination. There is a finite set, and you can make a tensor decomposition once and forever, and you can project onto this tensor coefficient. This is done by other groups, and this is well-known ways to do this. Okay, and then you have to project onto these tensor coefficients. In this way, actually, what is nice, the Lorentz indices are typically saturated. And what you observe, and this is very useful, is that the tensor reduction, actually, and I will speak in more detail about this, of 5 and 6 point functions is actually not problematic. So this gives you, in this very hard 6 point functions, actually, you typically don't have no high negative powers of ground determinants. So this can be avoided. So what is left still, you have to do some algebraic tensor reduction of 4 point functions. Or if your final states are massive or more too complicated, you may go to a numeric approach immediately, as maybe was pointed out by Walter Gille before. Then you sort your result, your tensor coefficient, into a basis set of 2, 3, 4 point scalar integrals. This basis set you can also obtain automatically if you want. You can isolate the infrared ultraviolet divergent part if you organized your calculation properly. And at the end, if you pursue an analytic approach, you should try to simplify the coefficients in front of your basis function. I will give an example later. This is a basic outline in words. Now, the last point, if you have calculated the real emission corrections and the virtual amplitudes, you have to combine the two to cancel the infrared poles explicitly. And this was said today already several times. You use the method proposed by Catani and Seymour, and also the generalization to the massive case. You use this the dipole formalism for massive particles in general. This is completely understood and can be worked with. So nothing has to be developed here. Now, to introduce some notation, an amplitude typically is, if we work with Feynman diagrammatic approach, is represented by some tensor integrals. What do I mean? An amplitude with some color structure and some helicity structure is a linear combination of some color factor times a Feynman diagram, Feynman integral, which has this type here. It is the numerator contains some helicity information or Lorentz structure. You have some propagators, and typically this can be written as a linear combination of some Lorentz structure times a tensor integral, which is defined here. And here you have some definitions of these objects which appear here. Now, what is helpful is actually, what I find helpful, is to separate the Lorentz structure from these integrals. And Walter Gille has shown he's using this Davidichev approach. I mean, you just can sit down and do it yourself, and you find the formula. And this R point, this rank R tensor integrals have this representation in terms of so-called scalar integrals with non-trivial numerator, and they are defined here. So this is an n-dimensional Feynman parameter integral with some quadratic form here, where S is a matrix, which is defined by your kinematics and your masses. And you have some non-trivial numerators. And okay, if you if you would express now your amplitude in this by these quantities here, you might try to make a numerical approach once you have subtracted the ultraviolet and infrared problems, and this is basically the approach of Giele and Glover. And my idea in the moment is that the first reactions actually we should look at are massless, 2 to 4, say, for jet production. And I think that there is actually an analytical solution is still possible, so I go for this direction. Now, okay, if you have scalar integrals without any numerator, there are some reduction formulas for them, and actually this was initiated by the work of David and Svi and Lance Dixon. And you can write down some reduction formulas which diagrammatically look like this. And basically they say any endpoint integral can be expressed by an n-dimensional, any endpoint function can be expressed as a linear combination of n minus one point functions plus some reminder term. And this reminder term is trivial in the case when you have more than 6 external legs. It's negligible if n is equal to 5, and there is some non-trivial remnant if n is equal to 4. And by iterating this formula here, you can say that any endpoint integral can be represented by n-dimensional triangle functions and n plus 2-dimensional box functions. And the latter actually, and this follows from a power counting argument, they are infrared finite. I should say that these reduction coefficients here, they obey a linear equation here, and they appear later in the talk. Now, if you write down a 5 or 6 point functions, you apply these reduction formulas, you can do this once and forever. These B's are these reduction coefficients. And now you see a 5 point function or a 6 point function is expressed by some 3 point functions, a triangle function, and some 6-dimensional 4 point functions. Now you don't have to read this equation. What is important here is the following. If the 5 or 6 point function contains some infrared divergences, this infrared divergence will appear as some triangle function which contains the infrared poles. So this reduction formula gives you a mean to separate the infrared divergence from your integrals. So automatically, by applying these formulas, you can separate ultraviolet and infrared divergences from your problem. Now, the reduction of these tensor-like integrals which lead to these non-trivial numerators, you can also find some reduction formulas, and I think this formula, it was proven by induction by differentiation by parts in Feynman parameter space, and I'm pretty sure it's equivalent to integration by parts in momentum space. I never looked at it, but I'm pretty sure. It tells you that each endpoint integral with a non-trivial numerator can be represented by scalar integrals with shifted dimensions. You heard this before. And now, if you have these shifted dimension integrals, and this was already pointed out by Walter, you can apply the scalar reduction formulas to find a basis of your reduction. So it means each endpoint integral of this type can be expressed by scalar integrals, some tadpoles, 2-point functions, 3-point functions in shifted dimensions, and 6-dimensional boxes, where this M is actually only non-zero for some infrared divergent cases where you find actually explicit representations. Now, this actually subtracts, I told you already, this applying this reduction formalism separates the infrared and ultraviolet information, as Walter pointed out. And the idea is just inside this formalism. And if you write a rank R tensor integral, you can write it at the scalar integrals with non-trivial numerators. And if you apply now this reduction step, you get some n plus 2-dimensional structures, and they are infrared finite. So you can calculate them numerically if you want. And some term which you can, again, where you can again apply some reduction step. So if you do not want to make an analytic calculation, this is the point to skip to a numeric approach. And again, I want to say, I think this is a basic idea also of the Giele approach. But okay, as I said, I think for the general case of 2 to 4 process with masses, it's a good idea to go numerically. But for the master's case, I think it's possible to do it analytically. So what is nice from the numerical point of view, if you have non-trivial numerators, actually, the problems comes from the denominator. And if you solve an integral with the denominator numerically stable, you do not have to do the reduction of this numerator. So I would say this is a nice basis function for a numeric evaluation, and not try to reduce this first. But people should do what they want. Now let's make an example for a non-phenomenological example. So we wanted to apply our formalism, and we just looked at the Yukawa model, where you have a scalar coupled to a fermion. And this is a Feynman diagram appearing in this theory. It's a trivial representation here in form of this trace. And in this case here, the tensor structure can be trivialized, I want to say. Because if you do the trace, you can cancel all the dot products appearing by some propagators. So you are left with some scalar integrals. You make the reduction, and you can express everything by these triangles and by these higher dimensional boxes. And what you find is actually, and you don't have to resist, this is the solution of this amplitude. And it can be written on one page. This is a six-point amplitude, which can be written on one page. This is not nothing, I would say. And I think it's, okay, it's very short, and I think it's very simple, and it's non-supersymmetric. It's probably the most simple one. These piece actually, they are not big things, not big objects. These are the reduction coefficients which appeared earlier in the talk. Okay, but as I said, this was a kind of a trivial example, and you can work it out by hand once you understand the stuff. Now we saw that actually if we just turn two scalars into two photons, we should also be able to have a very nice form of calculating it, but actually it is not true. Once you have tensor integrals, which you cannot reduce, it seems the mess appears, and it's really bad. I was really disappointed that it doesn't work so well as I wanted. But well, okay, what is my way of doing this stuff? We have two photons, two external photons. The amplitude has two Lorentz indices once we strap off the polarization vectors. So the tensor structure is a G mu nu and some external momentum here. We define some projection operators onto these coefficients, and we can project onto these coefficients by applying these projectors onto the Feynman diagrams. We have some transversality conditions. We can use gauge invariance, actually, which tells us we don't have to calculate all of these coefficients. And once you do this, what you get is that this amplitude is represented by these objects here, and they are just some linear combinations of these Feynman parameter integrals with numerators. Now I apply the tensor reduction, all is automated, all is in some MAPLE and form codes. You get the basis of scalar integrals of this type, where these double lines means this is an off-shell lattice, which comes from a pinch of a propagator of the six-point function here. Now you apply the scalar reduction, the reduction of scalar integrals, and you find your basis representation of your amplitude, and you observe that all the triangles which have massless legs, which contain infrared divergences, actually cancel. And they have to, because the amplitude is infrared finite. But you see, this is a nice representation of the amplitude, because you have an analytic structure, you collect the coefficient, and you know this here, you know it has to be zero, but here you expect cancellations. So it's good to have this irreducible function basis, and I think if you want to succeed analytically to have a nice compact result, you have to do it. There's no way. Okay. Now, you see another nice cancellations, and just one point. If people who do not like spin or helicity formalisms, actually, if you start with these polarization vectors here, you always can add and subtract some terms trivially that you can represent these amplitudes in terms of some gauge invariant objects. I do not know, probably this is well known. I just don't know it. I observed it, and I quite like it. Because if I do this, I see this is manifestly gauge invariant, and I know that these coefficients here are gauge invariant objects. So I don't expect cancellations between A and this BJ. So I have an irreducible set of gauge invariant functions. Now, it was relatively easy to find a simple formula for the plus plus component, and it again it fits on four lines. The plus minus is not presentable. Each of these tensor coefficients A has about 6 pages. It's still, there is no denominator which kills your numerical stability, so M plus minus I cannot present, but it's still numerically stable. This is a comment actually that some people who try to simplify this kind of expressions, they are always bothered by some nonlinear constraints between Mandelstam variables. And just a comment for the expert, nonlinear constraints between Mandelstam variables, which comes from zeros of some determinants, actually are represented linearly in these reduction coefficients, which helps to make a nice proper code. Now, actually my plan was now to show you an example for a 2-to-4 process, but I couldn't. I don't have it yet. So I had to do an example which was less complicated and which was still complicated enough that I get some features out. So I was looking at two photons going to three gluons. It's going over fermion loop. And okay, what you have to do, you have some helicity structure. You have these two topologies here. The color structure is trivial in this case. And your set of basis function is this. And okay, then you go to the machinery. And you find, okay, short result. Here, you can see actually that the 5 plus, you expect something short. You can express it actually in this combination of field strength tensors. So you are not forced to work with these complex objects, the spinor helicity objects. So this is a very simple representation of this amplitude. And I just go over it to the next case. Here you see, here you get also this gauge invariant combination here for the 4 plus 1 minus. And this coefficient here, actually, if you do it with my algorithm, you get something which is such long, 2 pages. But you can always think how you would simplify it by hand. And then you write the Mabel code. You give some rules how to simplify the expressions. You put the term in, and out comes something short. So this worked for this 5-point case very nicely. All my coefficients are a few lines, and you start off with 2, 3, 4 pages. So I cannot say if this works for the 6-point case, but it worked very nicely for this example. Okay. Now, okay, I have introduced this field strength representation of amplitudes, which I quite like. And I should tell you that if you have a gauge theory, your amplitude representation is not unique. So you can shift between different representations. And here are some rules which you can apply to get equivalent representations, actually. Okay, just to flash. Now, as actually Walter was pointing out, I would say this is a benchmark. If you are able to automatize this in an efficient way, you just can turn photons into gluons and you will get eventually actually 4-jet amplitude at some point. Now, I have no result for this. I can tell you that I have something in the computer, but it's not debugged because I know the 6 plus amplitude, 6 photons with all helicities plus, has to vanish. So if you calculate the 6 plus amplitude here and it's not 0, you made a mistake. So very simple. So this will debug my code eventually. And then I hope that I can all. It's not 0, exactly. It's not 0. Okay, I made a mistake. Stupid guy. Now, anyhow, I also should say, I don't now program the massless case. I program everything like this that I can go to the massive case also. So I better spend now a bit more time to make the general case and debug this and then complicate the situation that I go to through all this computational step 100 times. So I better spend another couple of months to do it correctly than to present now a fast result and I cannot use the code later. So after all, the thing which I calculated are starting point for this Golem project, and I hope I have enough energy to go on here. It's a bit boring after a while. So we also did, at some point, you see, I think that for massless amplitude 2-to-4, I'm pretty sure that you can get an analytic result. I do not know how short it is, but I'm sure you can get one, and I hope that it can, yeah, that you can have an efficient code eventually. But I'm also pretty sure if you calculate, say, 4b, two go to 4b's, and the b's are massive, you want to have mass effects, then I think the analytic approach will fail. It's just too complicated. Just from experience, if you just calculate 2 to 2 massive, you can get very complicated amplitudes. So there you should really maybe go with an approach like Walter proposed, or with the subtraction formalisms, whatever. Now, as I told, I would say I would use actually a basis set with this unreduced object here. So I would try to calculate these guys numerically. And actually, we did an exercise here. We said we want to calculate the most difficult basis function for a six-point process numerically. And this is actually the hexagon diagram itself. And okay, I do not want to go into details, I just tell you what we did. The problem is that once you have extracted all the infrared and ultraviolet divergences, you have still integrable singularities into your representation here. And typically, and this you can prove, the type of your singularities which are inside your phase space, which you where you compute over, are of 1 over square root type or logarithmic type here. And, okay, this is stupid to show this plot because you cannot understand it. But the point is actually, what I want to say is we have a representation where we can point of the region where we have problems in the integration. So once you know where your problem is in a numerical integration, you can do something with it. So I just tell you, we understand the singularity structure of one-loop integrations, of numeric one-loop integrations. We understand the singularity structure, and one could do some mappings. And actually what we did, we just look at the scalar integral corresponding to this diagram, and we just applying these reduction formulas, getting a basis in 3 and 4 point functions, and doing some numerical calculations of these guys. And I just told you, I show you here, we have stable program which gives us this distribution in a very reasonable time. So we have here a method which also gives us a numerical fallback solution in case we cannot do an analytical result to an amplitude. Now, maybe I'm a bit early, but it doesn't matter. The summary. So again, I want to point out multiparticle and jet production is very important for TV collisions. And it's really, really urgent, and it's time that many people start to do these kind of calculations, because the LHT is near, and we cannot do these calculations when the LHT starts to run. We have to start now, because developing these tools will need several years. This is clear. So I've shown you some new methods to calculate such processes at NNO, and I've shown you also some toy examples where we had actually to test our algorithms. And we gained some experience, which I think is very useful for the future. The first objective we have is really to calculate 4 jets at next to leading order in PP collisions. And it's still a long way to go. I don't promise anything in the moment. And as I told you, if we have masses in the game, I guess numerical methods will win. But also we have done some work there, and I'm confident that this can also be pursued. Now, Higgs search needs background calculations for 2 to 3 and 2 to 4 processes, and this has to be done on an industrial basis. And okay, this is going into this Golem project, and I mean, okay, the more people help me to create this thing, the better. And I want to make, this is what I always do now. So some people know these sentences, but I stress it again. We can do now single about extensions of the standard models. We can find very sexy resonances in our Tevatron or LHC. We might see a Gluino, very good. But if we cannot measure the thing precisely, if we do not understand the backgrounds precisely, we will not get a handle on a more profound theory. We have to understand the standard model good enough to be prepared actually for unexpected phenomena. So thank you.